Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Up Center second annual LGBTQA Film Festival. I'm Kevin. I'm the president of the Up Center of Champaign County, and you do not know how excited I am to see this many people here today. Our first showing had a good number, and we've doubled to tripled that number for this film, so I'm super excited. For those of you that don't know about the Up Center of Champaign County, we are the area's community center. Our purpose is hopefully to serve as a central hub for the community, whether you are a resident of the community or new to the area and need to connect some way, somehow to the LGBTQA community. We hope that we serve as that resource. We provide five major events a year, including a Valentine's dinner in February, a variety, hey, it is a gay community center, okay? With civil unions now, every day is Valentine's Day, right? Yeah, those of us that have already had the civil union can tell you otherwise, okay? 9 years, every day is not Valentine's Day in the Johnson Bower Sox household. That is in February. In April, we have a variety show called Turn It Up, which is spoken word, singing, dancing. There was a little of everything this year. It was phenomenal. We doubled attendance there from 150 to over 300 people for this year's event, so we're very excited about that. Then in June, we have the Film Fest, which we're really excited to be working with the art again in Illini Public Media this year, which I'll introduce here in just a minute. In August, we have our Pride Festival. How many of you went last year? I know you, those that were in the last film are like, we raised our hands already, but I'm counting you twice because I can. 2,500 people in Lincoln Square, really excited. And boy, wouldn't it be great if we doubled the attendance there this year? It's bigger, it's better. Thanks to our wonderful board of directors and chair of that committee, we have doubled the stages, the number of stages. So we have two stages. We have put a catwalk on the stage this year. The sound system at 88 Broadway there has increased, and they've gotten a new sound system. And so we're really looking forward to a bigger and better event this year for that as well. And then in October, we end the year with our biggest fundraiser, which is a gala. Last year, we held it at Krannert, and we're still looking for a final space for this year. So, again, really excited to have you here. Hope you enjoy the film. And if you have any questions, not only do we provide special events at the Up Center, but we also provide educational support and social groups and programming, including going to jobs and talking to people about equal rights in the workplace, or going to, we've built partnerships with a lot of social service organizations, such as the Rape Advocacy Counseling and Education Services. We've worked with CU Public Health, the Community Elements Group in regards to youth shelter. So we have a lot of resources and connections to the community. GCAP is another wonderful organization we work with. So if we don't offer the service, we do not duplicate services. And if we don't offer the services you're looking for, we will point you to the right place and hopefully somebody we've already made contact so that you know that it's LGBTQA friendly. Other than that, if you want a program started and it's not already here in the area and you would like to see that, please contact us because we have a way to have people propose new groups to hold within the Up Center as well. And for those of you who have not seen our new space, we do have space of our own this year with a private bathroom, and that is at the IMC building, the old post office in downtown Urbana. In regards to today, the next person I'm going to introduce you to is a person that I got to meet in regards to partnership with Illini Public Media on this film that I'm really excited to introduce to you, and that is my new friend Henry over here, who's going to tell you a little bit about their role in this and the film itself. And then we look forward to a lively panel discussion afterwards. Henry?
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Henry Radcliffe, Community Engagement Producer at Illinois Public Media, WILL radio, TV, and online, and the community cinema manager. All across the country, stations and communities are coming together to watch and discuss this afternoon's film, Two Spirits. Public television is known for high-quality, independent documentaries, and this afternoon, we hope we will continue to keep our reputation for bringing cinema into the community to watch and to enjoy, but also to engage in meaningful discussions about the local connections to the issues of the film. I won't take too much of our time, and I'll cut my introduction a little bit short so that we can get to the film. We partner with different community organizations, and today's community partner is the Upcenter of Champaign County. And Kevin gave you a very good description about the services that they do. We are also grateful for our national partner, the Independent Television Service, who brings community cinema to all of its public television stations and provides us with quality independent documentaries to air every week on WILO television and public broadcasting systems. This afternoon's program will be shown with closed caption, and the discussion will be translated by Rose Panapinto for members of the audience who need that service. I'm a little bit nervous, and I'm going to get out of the way so that we can watch the film. I hope you all enjoy it. Afterwards, I have some handouts and some surveys, and as Kevin said, we hope that you'll take part in a lively discussion. Thank you.
Okay, great. All right. Wow. So, before we introduce the panel, or should I say let them introduce themselves, I'd like to know from just those that are in attendance and that got to see the movie if there's any just general response to the film that you'd like to share before we move into the formal discussion portion of this afternoon's panel.
We're recording this, and so I have a microphone for anyone who would like to make a comment.
Well, I thought it was a very good film. I thought the cinematography was quite good. I would have preferred it to be a little bit brighter, but I think it'll still show up well on television. I think it's going to be on Tuesday evening at WILL TV, I believe. I'll start out with just that, and we'll see if anybody else is brave enough to say anything more.
Thank you. Any other initial responses?
I thought it was very good. My one complaint is that Crow's captioning was across the one guy's face almost all the time, and that really irritated me.
His way of protecting his identity, I guess.
It was always in the same place, and his face was always in the same place.
As a father, it was really, at points, really hard for me to watch. And so, but I thought it was really well done. I thought it was a great film. I agree with the captioning. It's the first thing that, when it was screened, that we kind of mentioned to ourselves was it would be nice to be able to shift those to the bottom, but that was something we weren't able to do. Well, what I'd like to do now is kind of switch to more of a formal discussion. And we have members of our community here that are going to share their stories. At first, they're just going to kind of introduce themselves. I'll kind of give you all a heads up of how we're going to do this. They're going to first introduce themselves one at a time, kind of talk about their experience here very briefly as a way of sparking later discussion. I have some very specific questions that the producers of the film would like to see discussed in public forums, and then we'll use those as catalysts to go into more spontaneous discussion and some questions from you all for the panelists. And as always, feel free. We have the wireless mic. You should feel free to share your ideas, your opinions, your thoughts as well. So without further ado, let me thank the panel first for being here and let them take it away. Lee, we'll let you go first since you're on the end.
Good afternoon. Do I need to be into kind of?
Yeah.
Okay. Hang on a second. Good afternoon. My name's Lee. What were the things you mentioned? A few specific things?
And just general background.
Oh, okay.
And if you have any general thoughts about the film.
Sure. My name's Lee. I identify as transgendered. That's pretty much, if you know, people ask, or if I'm telling someone about that, it's sort of a broad term. As far as trans labeling goes, I mean, there's lots and lots of different labels. I sort of consider myself somewhere emotionally and mentally between cross-dresser and transsexual, sort of in a gray area of that. Kevin, I think, mentioned, you know, just sort of touch on how society has affected me and my personal development. I grew up in Texas in the late 60s, early 70s, and I think that culture that I was, you know, immersed in and part of had a great deal to do with me being closeted for so many, many, many years. I think the nice flip side to that coin is that coming to live in Champaign-Urbana, I found this to be a very open, welcoming community, and I think it, and especially the Up Center, has had a great deal to do with me, frankly, being able to come out and speak in front of this many people and talk about these things that for so many years were quite a secret for me.
Hi, my name is Sid. I am 19. I also identify in the sort of transgendered, transsexual realm. I was born biologically female, but I prefer to go by he. And I'm on hormone replacement therapy. It's been about 10 weeks. It's really cool. I still live in a smaller town. I live in Monticello, Illinois. I will be moving into the Champaign-Urbana area at the end of the summer, and it's a community that has allowed an incredible amount of growth for me. A lot of people are just very open. I didn't really feel comfortable coming out in a really small community, but I come here and people, you know, they're like, oh, what are you? And I explain to them, and they're like, oh, that's great. And it really means a lot when people don't think that you're weird. I don't really know what else to say.
Hello. Everybody hear me okay? Hey. My name is Peggy Wire. I am a biracial lesbian who was born and raised in this town. I guess my little bit of background story would be being born and raised in this town has its ups and its downs, I suppose, but mainly I was brought up in a very strict, somewhat strict Baptist family. Still are very strict Baptist people in my family. And it was interesting growing up in that setting because from a very young age I knew that I was not the same. I don't want to call myself different because sometimes that could be taken as a bad thing. But everybody knew around me that, you know, well, Peggy's not the same as all the other little girls, but still in that setting, people wanted to believe that I would grow up and do the traditional Baptist thing, I suppose, to what most people would think that is. And that's just not the way it turned out. So, I mean, there's a lot to me, but that's kind of me in a nutshell, I suppose. Oh, and I am also on the board of directors. I act as the secretary, and I also co-chair the youth committee. So there's that.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to start with the discussions. One of the commentaries from the movie kind of defines Well, they actually use this quote. The crossroads of two gingers can be a gift. He also says, the place where two discriminations meet can be a dangerous place to live. And I think that's true for the LGBTQA community in general. And I'd like kind of your thoughts on that, that quote, that it's both a gift and can also be a dangerous place to live, and how maybe both of those have either helped in the process of coming out or hindered in having you wait longer to come out. Does that make sense? Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay.
You want to, we'll start down there this
I'll start,
time.
Yeah. It's okay. My cool. Turn to start. Okay. I would say for me, it's definitely a gift. I mean, I can't imagine my life being any other way than what it is, you know. And a lot of people would, you know, in my life from the past would want to see it turn out in a different way, I guess. But I can definitely say that, you know, I accept who I am, and I love who I am, and I love the people around me, and especially a lot of the people in this room have been very supportive. But as far as the place where two discriminations meet can be a very dangerous place to live, I can definitely agree with that as well. I mean, with some of the stories that you heard, Sid, and it's, you know, it's hard growing up in the Midwest where, you know, you do have a lot of these things that people expect you to conform to. And you know, you are who you are when you're born. So, you know, how can you change to conform to what somebody else wants you to be? And that in itself can be very dangerous because, you know, that's what society wants you to do, quote unquote, I guess. So, yeah, it's definitely a gift and dangerous all at the same time, wrapped up into one little ball.
While I identify as being male, I still feel extremely, extremely androgynous, and having the freedom to be masculine or be feminine is something that feels very empowering. I don't really feel like I have a lot of limitations. I feel like I can do, you know, I can do what I want or wear what I want, and it's great. And I accept other people if they want to wear whatever they want or identify however they identify. Accepting masculinity and femininity within yourself, lost my train of thought. it really gives more room to explore, and it allows you to understand a lot more people. As for the crossroads, what I've experienced is some days I would want to wake up and be more masculine, or some days I would want to wake up and be more feminine. And in my house, it's very much like things need to be stable, and there's not a good understanding of fluid expression of sexuality or gender. And if you wake up one morning and you act this way, and you wake up one morning and you act the other way, then there's something to the people that I live with. They think that there's something psychologically wrong with that, and there's not anything that's psychologically wrong with that. And people also, in many cases, they shun what they don't know, or they hate what they don't know just because they don't understand it. And I want to make more people understand.
That's it. I guess for me, the crossroads of discrimination has some reality, even, I would guess, today as part of this event. If I do stay for the whole evening, which it might be out at midnight or so, 11:30, I plan either to, you know, I arrived here alone, to walk back to my car with either an escort, if I'm dressed the same way, or to change clothes in order to get back to my car, which is in the parking garage. I had no problem, you know, walking from there to here in the daylight, but I think for me there that would cross a level of not feeling safe doing that. Some of the blessings, some of the blessing of having this, I think maybe coming out in my you know chosen career path. I've worked, you know, either in the performing arts or visual arts much of my career, but sort of had a yearning to be part of the healing fields of some kind about 3 years ago, and so sort of changed careers and became a teaching assistant at one of the alternative schools in our community. So I work every day with youth who have mental disorders, emotion disorders, or conduct disorder as high school students. So some of what they were talking about in the film of being in that space of being healer, teacher, advisor, I feel like I'm living some of that, and I get a lot out of that.
I have the microphone, so I guess I'll go. Does anybody know how many people in the film were actors and how many people were live from the family, from the neighborhood, from the town? It has definitely the feel of a documentary, and of course Ken Burns was there, and that's what he does. So I'm automatically predisposed to think that this was primarily a documentary, but obviously somebody had to be playing Fred there near the end, since Fred was dead. Does anybody know, was Fred's mother on the film really Fred's mother? That's true, okay. Were there any other actors besides the person playing Fred near the end there? So the pictures of the child, the young person was Fred, and how about when he was high school age and et cetera. Does anybody know why Fred didn't stay with his friends at the carnival?
It sounds like, according to, they don't really mention a lot of it. They don't really mention a lot of that information in the educational materials or on the website. And it sounds like from, you know, even the film itself, there's a lot of question that of how well the investigation was handled to begin with, especially up front. And so it, even in the film, it seemed like a lot of information was left out. Yeah.
I'm very nervous. I forgot your name, the woman on the end next to Kevin.
Lee.
Thank you.
I'm Lee. Sorry. I'm going to be here for the last film, and I will walk with you to your car, and I am sure we can get other people to walk with you to your car.
Thank you.
So you don't have to change your clothes. You won't be by yourself.
I've come across this before. The assailant pleaded guilty. When that happens, you don't get the full information that you might get from a trial with all the evidence presented. So that may be one reason why it's very murky. Of course, you can still not, even when there's a full trial, you'll get two versions or more. But that may be one reason why it's terribly murky, because they didn't have to call anyone as a witness. I'm back. It may be obvious to other people, but I want to be careful about it. That where two discriminations meet, I can think of two possible pairs of discriminations. I can think of race and a big subsuming of gender and preference, or I can think of discrimination on the basis of being transgender and discrimination on the basis of being gay, because it was made clear that there was people were confused or questioning or wondering and then being told, well, it didn't really matter whether he was gay or he was transgendered or she or what, you know what I mean? So what do other people think are the two discriminations that are meeting?
That's a good question. Like, the two discriminations can be also not only that, but cultural as well, in regards to culture and its connection to the LGBTQ community. And I'd be curious to know from the panel, how has culture, your culture, whether it be your church culture or your culture within the community, no matter what, however you define culture, how has culture been a part of your coming out process?
Well, I think I mentioned just when I did my introduction, you know, this town I found to be a welcoming community. I used to be on staff at the Krannert Center. I consider even that, you know, that organization of itself is a, you know, a subset of culture. It was actually when I came onto staff there that I met enough people who were okay about who they were. That was enough signals that, you know, maybe it's time I start becoming more okay with who I am and what I like to wear and how I like to look. You know, it's been as I've broadened that circle of friends, it started out as just, you know, two or three people who I felt I could talk about this about. And as I broadened that circle, you know, it's come to include a great deal of the community here in town who know. Just this, I'm sort of this past 6 months in a process where I decided about 6 months ago, you know, it's about time that I'm really out. I mean, I felt like I was out there to a lot of friends, but it was time that I get comfortable with and everybody else gets comfortable with me looking like this in the community. And that was about the time I got to know and become friends with people in the UP Center. And that, as a little subset of community, has been, I mean, were it not for the UP Center, I know I would not be sitting in front of this many people talking about these things. So.
And we did not pay him to say that.
I think in my case, there were a number of different things in culture that kind of helped me realize how I identified. Being a lot younger, when I was very young, this is kind of corny, but I watched a lot of Disney movies. And one of the movie, my favorite movie when I was little was Pinocchio. And Pinocchio wanted to be a real boy. And I was like, oh, I want to be a real boy too. And when I would watch the Disney princess movies, I was like, oh, I want to be a princess and I want to be the prince. Like, it was just very, very androgynous. And as I got older in middle school, I was obviously having some sort of identity crisis. I was like, oh, I don't know what I am. I'm so confused. And I read a book called Luna by Julianne Peters, which is about a transgendered individual, and that helped a lot. And then I pretty much turned to looking for all of this information about transgendered culture on the internet. So I was always on the internet trying to find out about historical figures or, you know, unfortunately I came across, you know, discrimination and crime, and that caused a lot of fear, and I'd never heard of anyone else who felt this way before. And so when I was younger, it was mostly hunting on my own. But this culture in this area, especially being in theater, gender has the tendency to be much... An expression has a tendency to be more fluid in that realm, and that's it's really comfortable because, I mean, people are always cross-dressing, you know, in roles and stuff like that, and you know, that's it just makes me feel more comfortable.
Thank you.
I can definitely agree with growing up and watching, you know, the cartoons and the Disney films and wanting to be the prince. I never really wanted to be the princess, but that's just me. but, I mean, Culturally, I think it depends on where I was. Like when I was in school, something that a woman said in the film that I really, really connected with was, like, for instance, when I was in school, I didn't have to come out because I wasn't in. I can completely identify with that, but in my church, it was the complete opposite. It was, you know, it was always more or less a battle having to, you know, why should I have to answer these questions about myself? This is who I am, and I don't know why it's such an issue. And I was more or less outed at my church. So that caused its own set of issues. But, you know, culturally, I guess it's just... I lost my train of thought. you know, it just... I think it really depends on where you're at in your coming out process, that, you know, what's happening around you at that time and who you have around you. I think that plays a big role.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, first of all, thank you for being here and for sharing your experiences with us. I am particularly grateful because, I'll be honest, I feel fairly ignorant about the experience of LGBTQ people. And I have a question regarding something you said. You mentioned the masculine and feminine energies and being able to switch between the two. And I'm wondering how you understand the masculine and feminine energies. Thanks.
Wow, that's a great question.
I think in my case, in our society, there's obviously a binary that is established as, you know, in most cases, this is what a masculine activity is, this is what a feminine activity is, and activity and interest-wise, I have interests in everything, and so it becomes very gray, and then it becomes, androgynous, and part of the idea of masculine and feminine energy is very, it's something that is just very natural, and it's something that to some extent cannot be defined. It's just I just feel the, you know, a sort of balance inside of me, and so this is the first time that I've seen this film, and I've started doing a lot of research on Two-Spirit, and it really speaks to me a lot. And so I'm still trying to figure out how to explain that to people, but it's natural. I just know that there's something that is there that is both, and it's very gray. It's not black and white at all.
And kind of combining that with the previous question about culture, it's interesting because I have a 4-year-old who goes to preschool. He has two dads. He goes to preschool. He goes to a school that allows, you know, kids to be kids. If they want to dress up, they can dress up. They have housekeeping. They have all these, you know, places in the school. And yet, even without a lot of influence from school or from his family or grandparents or anything telling him what roles there are in society, he comes home with ideas of what is and is not masculine or feminine, and has role ideas of who should play what role in society already at 4, and it boggles my mind at 4 years old that those are so prevalent in our society, that culture has that much influence that a 4-year-old comes home and tells us, you know, all of his stuffed animals, all of them have a mommy and daddy. Now, he is adopted. He has two dads. And he has friends with a mommy and daddy. He has friends with two mommies. He has friends with just one parent raising the child, or an aunt, uncle. He has all this, and yet every one of his toys has a mommy and a daddy. And that, you know, this is a girl's bike versus a boy's bike, even though there's not those influences at home. And so I think that's where culture has a huge impact, even when we don't realize it or how to know how to control it.
Yeah, it's just something that has been in our society for so long that it's like it's oh, that's a girl's bike. Obviously, that's a girl's bike. You know, if you think about it, it's like it's just because it's a girl's bike because we say it's a girl's bike, and right. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, I just have a quick comment. I'm African-American and Ojibwe from Michigan, and I just want to challenge and remind everyone that this documentary was not just about transgender and sexuality, but it was actually about American Indian people and the Navajo Nation. Now imagine if Fred Martinez lived in this particular area, which is racist and hostile in general towards American Indian people. And I just want everyone to keep that in mind.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it was really important. And so, you know, we reached out to multiple Native American and Indian communities here at the university, Chicago, Springfield, trying to find someone to speak from that perspective, because I think it's really, really important to also know that, yes, and racism plays a part. And it's also where culture plays. I hope you don't mind me telling this, Peggy, but when I asked Peggy to talk from a cultural perspective, you know, her response to me is, culturally, I'm white because of it was really interesting to me because for you, culturally, you're white, even though society may not perceive you as such.
A lot of the times people will look at me and they either assume one or two things. A couple of things, I suppose. I'm a black woman, I'm a black man, or I am a Puerto Rican woman or a Puerto Rican man. But culturally, growing up, I was raised in a predominantly white home. I did not know my father, who is African American. So culturally, I guess I can, you know, would say I am white because that's how, you know, those were the influences that I experienced growing up. This movie was about a person of color, and you know, that hit home for me because being a person of color, even though I consider myself culturally white, doesn't change the fact that I am still a biracial woman. So that I think if Fred were here in this town in this day and age, it might have been better, it might have been worse. You know, who's to say? But that does, the fact that he was a person of color and is a person of color does play a role in that, I would say, I believe.
I'm also curious about age. I'm going to have the two of you, well, all three of you, answer from different perspectives. You work with youth. So from that perspective, I'd like to kind of talk about the youth perspective and the culture that you observe today as somebody working in that environment. And then later we'll get to your role as somebody who identifies as trans in that environment. And you've kind of, you're at that cusp where you've left high school, you're now in college, and how that transition has been and the difference between the two in this area. And then Peggy, you know, what youth are saying at our support group and social groups, like if there's a theme of how it is to come out in this community to identify as LGBTQA in our community. So let's start with you, yeah. Lee.
The school I teach at is a small one. There's approximately 60 students going there. It's a fairly intensive day. The students have a lot of issues on their plate that they're trying to work through. Some just to learn how to, you know, be in class with another student and, you know, not disrupt the classroom or not, you know, they have a lot to deal with. Now, our school does not have, hasn't put together an LGBT organization like many of the high schools have, or a gay straight alliance, that's the word I was looking for, like the high schools have. Again, luckily, we are able to channel students toward the UpCenter youth program for that sort of, you know, to it's students who request that or we think might help from that. This year, especially, there was, you remember, 9-10 months ago, especially bullying in the schools, the bullying of LGBTQ youth was quite a bit in the newspaper. You know, we had some meetings about that at our school to help raise awareness within the faculty. You know, to say what we could do. It was surprising to me the variance of opinion and the broad range in that school of what bullying was. And, you know, some people even were saying, oh, you know, they don't really mean anything bad when they call someone gay. They're just using that word. That's almost a direct quote from that meeting. So that was sort of a shock there. Afterward, it was pretty well, you know, our principal sent a note out and said, you know, if you, we all can recognize this bullying when we see it. If you don't say anything about it, you're condoning it. And so personally, I've sort of taken that on, especially this year, is whenever I hear the F word or the G word, which is at least 2 or 3 times a day, I try to take that. I don't want to come out hostile to these students either, or really, you know, bang them over the head with what I'm saying. But I try to do what I call a sort of teaching moment, and I sort of take that child aside, or you know, and just say, I don't know, you may not realize it, but that word is really hurtful. You might want to try something else, or just some simple thing like that. Because 90% of the time, you know, they're not at a place where they're really even ready to hear that. But that's how I experienced that in a school, and a lot of my associates I've noticed have taken that on too, is that whenever you see the bullying, we confront it, we talk about it, we don't let it go, you know, unchecked at the school. That's about it, I think, as far as, yeah.
Thanks. In my small area, in high school, there wasn't any sort of LGBT group or Gay Straight Alliance. The other thing too is that the high school and the community is predominantly white, and a lot of people have a lot of, you know, strong religious beliefs, and feeling very diverse and having diverse interests and wanting to be in a diverse community, but not really being able to do that because I still had to live at home. That was, I didn't really enjoy that very much. And I was not out in high school except to maybe a few people, because I had a couple of instances in my earlier years of high school where most people assumed that I was a lesbian and I had been made fun of, and I was extremely self-conscious and extremely terrified of that. And so I just kept everything hidden. And, and then, transitioning into college, cause I go to Parkland, it's like, it was so liberating to go to a place where not only were there people of all identities and sexual orientations and races, but there were also people of all ages too, and it was a really excellent community and school to get into. And Parkland also has we have something called Q&A. It's our LGBT group, Queer and Ally, and we also have tons of, there are tons of other groups, religious groups, there are cultural groups, and just that being in that environment is just so, it's so much fun. And some people who came from Champaign, they already had some of those groups, and all of this was new to me, and I was like, oh, I just want to get involved in everything. It's been a good experience. becoming a part of this community.
Great. And Peggy, you work with the youth that come for support, and not speaking for them, but what are some themes that you hear from the youth in regards to how easy it is to come out in this area at high schools? And all of our local high schools here in Champaign-Urbana do have GSAs. We serve the Champaign County, so I know that some of our youth come from surrounding areas that may not have GSAs. So kind of speak to both if you can.
Yeah, I would say that some of the youth, it's easy to come out today and it's hard to come out today, just as it was 50 years ago. Because it's LGBTQ people and issues are much more widely publicized now than they were then, making it a little more visible to our youth so that they feel, you know, it's okay for me to come out, because look at all these other people who are doing it, and, you know, they're okay. But then again, there's the difficult part of being in school and facing discrimination on a daily basis from those people around you that aren't educated about our community, more or less, and dealing with that. So, you know, I've heard from our kids that that you know, in some ways it's easier to come out today, and it's easier to talk about it and, you know, be themselves. And I love that, because, I mean, like I said, I was more out than in when I was in high school, but I don't think there was a GSA at my school when I was there, and this was, you know, not too long ago. I'm 25. But then again, having to face that, the fear of being retaliated against because of who you are and who your what your self-expression is and things of that nature. So, yeah, I would definitely say it's gotten easier, but there's still a long way to go.
Thank you. There's a question up here.
Yeah, the other day I was talking with a couple of really kind of humanities intellectual academic types, and we were having a discussion about, spurred by Lady Gaga, about this like major appropriation of her new song, and kind of this movement of this, or sort of resurgence of the movement of being born this way. So both of these people kind of balked at that and really emphasized their active roles in choice in the matter. And I'm just interested in how that's played out for you, and that it does kind of relate to age and your status, or like your place in the coming out process, but like this whole nature versus nurture, like how has that played out in your life?
What was the song? I may not be familiar with the, I just want to make sure.
Well.
Oh, okay.
I think that, yeah, that's a good question. So kind of nature versus nurture, you know, I've had the same discussion just a couple months ago with friends that their religious belief, even, you know, for them, even if there is a gene found, they then default to behavior and choice in that behavior, and feel that you still have that choice to not act upon that. So, yeah, how has nature versus nurture impacted your lives?
Is it my turn to go first this
sure,
time?
Sure.
Okay, we'll just keep flipping. I think when I was young and I knew that I was different, I didn't have a word for what I was. Obviously, I was gay. I didn't know what it was. So I think my choice in that role was I wanted to wear shorts today instead of pants, and a dress wasn't even, you know, on the list of things that I could wear. You know, that was more my choice. Was that what actually happened? Probably not, because there are some pictures out there of me in little pink frilly dresses, which will be found and burned. But, you know, for those people who want to give that argument that say, you know, you've always had the choice. Well, how is that so? Did you choose? When did you choose? Do you remember the specific point in time when that happened for you? Because I don't. I can remember at my very youngest wanting to play with Ninja Turtles instead of Barbie dolls, and when I got Barbie dolls, I would put them in a microwave and watch them explode. I mean, that's, I don't, you know, where in the...
They could have come and played with my Barbie dolls.
Okay, well,
just saying.
I had Ninja Turtles and G.I. Joes. So, but where, for a child, would they choose? I mean, what child do you know of that has that frame of mind to say, you know, I'm going to choose to be this way because I have the frame of mind to do that at 2 or at 3, you know? So, I mean, I definitely think nature plays a much bigger role.
Okay. I've tried to, you know, do research on different theories as to what may affect some, you know, what biologically may affect somebody's sexual orientation or gender orientation, and it's still difficult to say even after doing research, because there are some sources that say that it has to do with the amount of hormones that are that the fetus is surrounded by in utero. I've heard things like if a mother has 3 daughters and then she has a son, then the son is more likely to be gay. I've heard all these different things, and I still don't. There's still not really an answer. To me, it's kind of a case-by-case. It's a case-by-case basis. Everybody really is unique, and some people may be more affected by nature, and some people may be more affected by nurture. And in my case, I don't really, you know what amount of hormones I was, you know, surrounded by, you know, when my mother was pregnant with me, but a couple things that I started to notice. I have a younger brother, and as soon as he was born, there was kind of an establishment of the other. And at his first birthday party, my mother told me I had to wear a dress because I was a girl, and I started kind of fighting that, and I was like, just because my biology is this way, that really shouldn't have anything to do with it. So maybe just having a brother kind of made me realize that that maybe I was more like him than my, you know, than I was like my mom.
Thank you. Yeah, I grew up, surrounded by the sort of standard 1960s toys and pop culture, and the sort of I had the G.I. Joes, the Lionel Trains, the standard sort of boy stuff, and loved that. But 4, 5, and 6 even knew, you know, something was different. When we would, like, Batman was the big sort of big TV show at that time, and when we would, all the kids in the family or the cousins would get together and we'd run around the yard, you know, saying, we're going to play Batman now. Consistently, I would say, well, I'm going to be Batgirl. Or was it Batwoman? I don't know if it was Batgirl or Batwoman in the TV show, but I want to be Batgirl. Still today, somewhat. And even at that same age, had many, and still very vividly remember many dreams that were transgendered themes of some kind. And I just, at 4, 5, and 6, those are hard to explain, hard to get around. And still to this day, I tend to identify with female characters in literature. I'm quite a comic book nut. But it tends to be, again, Batgirl, or Spider-Woman is my new one. She's in a number of a series that I'm reading. But and I think choice, I mean, you mentioned choice, and I sort of like to think that, you know, I have a choice in my life. I can either sort of be this way and have those dreams and that history and cover it up, or I can choose to, you know, go out on the town or go to the farmer's market dressed how I like, and I think that's where choice plays for me.
Thank you. Yeah, I think for me, choice is, I chose to hide for quite a while, and that was a choice, even though I felt like it was culturally pressured for me. And I'd like to see people have their choices taken away and try to live that way, because it's really miserable, and it's really hard to finally come to terms with being okay with moving forward with who you really are. We have a time for about one more question. Based on the clock, go for it.
Okay. The microphone has been returned to me. Thank you. There are four or five things I want to say relatively quickly here. They're going to encompass a series of things. First off, I want to defend the area. I've lived and been in and out of this community area for decades, some decades more in, some decades more out. I've never encountered any serious or even mild amount of hostility toward Native Americans. I think some of this confusion comes from those people who want to retain the chief. I think that's because it symbolizes things to them that they like, and it has happy memories for them. And because they love the chief doesn't mean they dislike Native Americans. For those who might be listening to this tape and don't see the movie, I'll say that one of my associations was that I thought Fred's mother looked like how Sarah Palin's going to look 15 years from now. I think that in terms of critiquing the movie, the weakest part of it is that they didn't handle as deeply the legal portion. I was very glad to see the part where the lesbian lady from New York came down strong on making the state's attorney follow proper procedure and give full attention to all the issues, and that was very good. I would wish that they would have put a little more in on how the legal thing was handled. I do appreciate some of the intricacies. I do know that if they can save time and money and get a plea and avoid messy things, that there are lots of state's attorneys all around the country that'll go for that. Sometimes they take into consideration what they think they can get out of the jury pool, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that is the biggest weakness in the movie. In terms of what the young lady over to my left was asking about, nature, nurture, et cetera, I would say, unfortunately, we're still a long way from totally understanding that. I think we're a lot closer than we used to be. I think also, now if you'll think along with me here for a moment, and I'll bring it to some relevance for the gentleman and his son there and the mommies and daddies for the toys. If there are people who are, quote, born that way, unquote, and that's just the way it is, and that needs to be understood and dealt with better, then the opposite side of that coin is that there are people who can be acculturized into having identification either with a heterosexual format or having identification with a homosexual format. You can't have one and not the other, as I see it. If the child is, quote, born that way, and that is coming through in the form of thinking things through and orienting his thinking in terms of there being mommies and daddies for these toy animals, perhaps that is his born that way biology evidencing itself, and that's why he's doing it, not because he's been acculturated that way. So these are just things to think about. I'm not guaranteeing you one way or the other, but I think they're worth some thought. And I'll make one last comment before I relinquish the microphone. I think Sean should have been executed. I don't see any point in keeping people like Sean around, but I'm not going to get out and wave placards over it.
All right, thank you. I do want to really quickly mention, in regards to the nature versus nurture, there are multiple components to sexuality that people often forget about. I think we can choose to participate in the act of sex with someone. However, we often forget the other pieces of sexual orientation and gender identity expression, which are the emotional connections that we have with human beings. And thank you. I think that's the part for me that I'm unable to choose. And at one point in my life, I have to say that I believed that we were all born at one time. I had this philosophy that we were all born bisexual, and that it was, the outside influences that actually took that away from us. I've grown up and matured a little bit more, and I think that I've kind of moved away from that philosophy, and maybe it's my own jealousy of not being able to identify as bisexual and not having that ability necessarily. A whole, I identify as gay, and there are times that I really thought, that we all identified as bi at birth, and I kind of wish that we did, just from a fairy tale, wish we could all just get along and love one another kind of perspective. But as I grew older, I just realized that individuality is just that, individuality, and who am I to determine what somebody else's individuality is and how they define that? So I want to thank our three individuals.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Welcome.
And I do live in Champaign, and I've lived here for 3 years. And I find it very racist and very offending that the mascot is a chief. And I don't find that to be, there should be a reason, just because it's tradition, that it should be continued. And I'm offended when I see T-shirts out and with a chief on it. And I don't really find Champaign that open to the gay community, so...
Thank you for sharing that. I think in regards to, feel free to keep the mic if you want. I think it's so hard because I come from this area, and now at 39, I feel extremely supported as an individual. I have family that now support me. I have friends. I choose the church that I go to. So, but that wasn't always the case. And I think our individual communities really become an individual experience as well. You know, when I was younger, my dad was extremely racist and let it be known not only within the family, like me dating outside of our race, etc., but he was also extremely homophobic, even when I came out to him, saying things even at his deathbed that he still hated me. And I was being raised in a very specific a church that at a very young age I didn't have a choice to go to or not. And those communities weren't supportive. So I think it's really hard to label an entire community based on one person's experience because it really does matter. We talked earlier today, where you're at in the coming out process, who your friends are, my son is sixth generation on both my mom and dad's side. So some of our worst enemies was my own family. And that culture and that environment was what would make me, as an individual, make assertions about the CU area. And I think it's going to be different for each individual. On that note, if you are struggling, if you are in need of friends, that's what we're here for. And we hope that the UP Center is the place where everybody can come, be themselves, and be supported and feel supported. And we have information out in the hallway, and we welcome everybody, and we hope to see you at the center. Thanks to our panelists for coming out today. Appreciate it.
I'd like to say another thing. Thank you all for coming out to the community cinema, and this program will also be broadcast Tuesday night at 9 o'clock on WILO television. And just as a short thing, this was about Native Americans, and as I've watched this and I've seen other things like this, the Americans that came to this country were not necessarily very nice to the Americans that were here in this country when they got here, and they're still not nice to them. And it's always surprising to me how history is just telling us, oh, here's another time where we just like are treating a group of people that were here not very well as the new residents or the new visitors or whomever the second group of people that came to this country were. And that was part of this discussion that we sort of missed, but if you can watch this again on Tuesday and maybe give some of that some thought, because there are some just heartbreaking issues that slap you in the face as you watch this the first time, the second time, and maybe even the third time. Also, I've got some questionnaires if anyone has time and would like to fill that out before you leave. But thank you again for coming out, and I hope you can enjoy some of the rest of the films this afternoon. Thank you.